Greetings and welcome once again to Throttle Up. And a special welcome to all of you critical thinkers out there. And as you know, this is a radio show that showcases critical thinking. And I actually should say this is a radio show and a podcast because we are starting our podcast initiative. We're getting that up and running at, I believe it's almost ready to go. I think there's a few more technical things that have to be done, but I am advised that it is nearly ready. And so I guess we could say that this is a radio show and a podcast that showcases critical thinking and is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired, and I am a naval aviator. And of course, once a naval aviator, always a naval aviator. We sort of come from a special group, a close-knit group, and it's a relatively small community, but I am proud to be a naval aviator and also a pioneer in the field of critical thinking and high velocity reason. Now, our tagline for the show is to accelerate beyond the ordinary. And the reason why we say that is we want to encourage everybody to think ahead of the curve, if you will, or to get your thoughts out there into the future and look at what things could happen, likely to happen, and prepare ourselves for the unfolding future situations that will inevitably occur. Now, our motto is employ high-velocity reason to achieve high-octane performance. And you notice, once again, we are talking about moving our thoughts. Our thoughts are not static. They're not stationary. We don't think in a stationary way. That's not the way thinking ought to be, and it certainly is not the way this reality that we call the world or the universal reality. It's not the way it's set up. Everything is changing and it's moving, and our thoughts need to do the same thing. All right, our mission statement is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. And we talk about that, but we also will discuss the current situation in our world from the perspective or from the lens of critical thinking. It's kind of a new and refreshing way to take a look at what's going on. And that's what makes Throttle Up a bit different than other shows, is that we look at it from a critical thinking standpoint. We employ critical thinking concepts and attributes and methodologies. And so as we do that in a real world environment, I think we can do a better job of explaining what critical thinking is all about and how it can improve our lives. Now, our website is throttleupradio.com, and the audio engineering services are provided for this show by Evergroove Studios, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, which is right outside of Denver. It happens to be in the foothills. A great group of folks, enjoy working with them. Graphic support is provided by Hero Marketing, and they are located in St. George, Utah, and they also are a great group of people to work with. They have provided us with graphic support and promotional material for the duration of the show, and of course, our association goes way back, I guess it's been almost 10 years. All right. So, one more thing I wanted to point out before we get into the bulk of the show, which is that Red State Talk Radio is affiliated with a marketing firm that deals with outdoor or billboard marketing, outdoor billboards. And they have a outdoor billboard, or what you could also call a digital billboard or electronic billboard. They have one located near Times Square in New York City, and it's on 42nd Avenue. And that billboard contains a promotional video clip that promotes Throttle Up Radio. And for all of you that want to visit New York or live there or live in the greater New York area or would like to take, well, whatever, a trip up there. And, of course, New York City is a great place to visit. You may want to stop off at 42nd Avenue between 42nd Street between 7th and 8th Avenue. Take a look at that electronic bulletin board, and you can see a Throttle Up promotional video clip. We think it's really great, and we're proud to have that going in as part of our advertising of the show. All right, so let's see if I completed everything I said. Yes, so all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is the place where all critical thinkers are welcome with open arms, and hopefully where America finds solutions to its most pressing problems. Now, again, the show is organized, Throttle Up is organized into three parts. Part one is a continuing discussion of critical thinking, and that is that's an important segment in the show. We want to bring that into the marketplace of ideas and show how it can be applied on a regular basis to help us in our lives. Part two is our storyboard, and that could be a story that relates to usually the current events of the day. And finally, part three is our radio essay, and the essay could come from a number of places. It could be a book review. It could be an original essay or original article that someone, including myself, has written. Often it is, because we like to do that. And that completes the organization of the show. So let us now press on to part one. Okay, this is part one of Throttle Up for this week. And part one is a continuing discussion of critical thinking. And so let me set the stage for our discussion for this week. And it's a continuation of what we've been talking about for the last few weeks. We've been talking about a hypothetical but really realistic scenario or story about that we are, let's assume that we are a member of a group or tiger team that has been brought together and formed up by our organization, the company we work for. And we work for a company that delivers training and training products, training services to industry. So we're a training company, or the more common term is a training house. And so we have been commissioned to put together, to develop, and to deliver a training program for oil platform operators, and in particular the deep water oil platforms, which are fairly complex and relatively dangerous environment. And the reason for that is because of the disaster that has occurred oh, a few years ago. If all of you probably know about Deepwater Horizon. It was even made into a movie, that disastrous occurrence that killed 11 workers, oil platform workers. It was pretty tragic, and as it turns out, it could have been prevented, and that was the ultimate tragedy. And so to help us avoid this catastrophic situation again, this story, it's a make-believe story, but it is realistic. This story continues in terms of how can we better handle this complex environment? How can we prevent these catastrophes from happening again? What preventive measures can we put in place? What lessons learned can we employ in this environment so as to prevent this tragedy from occurring again? Or, you know, another way of saying that is to prevent all catastrophes. Let's see if we can figure out how to do that. Okay, so we are involved in this effort, if you will, right? And the first thing that we have noticed, which of course, is not only going to be to support our storyline here, but it's also really a justification and a amazing level of support for this radio show, this show that we call Throttle Up, and the fact that this show is showcasing and trying to highlight critical thinking. This thing, I just came across this. I was rather amazed and delighted in this thing that has just happened. So let me read it to you. It says that in the future, in a 2016 Future of Jobs report published by the World Economic Forum, they predicted that by 2020, critical thinking and complex problem solving will be the most in-demand set of skills and activities in the global job market, but also the hardest to recruit for. So another way to say this is that the World Economic Forum is predicting that critical thinking and complex problem-solving skills will become increasingly in demand, and they will be the primary skills that most people in organizations and companies and industries, those will be the skills that they will be looking for. Now, the problem is, how do we build people with those skill sets? How do we give people those skill sets? They're typically not taught in our educational and training programs being offered by our educational and training institutions. They are typically not taught. And so now I believe that that's going to change. I believe that there's going to be more and more organizations, more and more educational institutions and training houses that are going to be offering courses, either formal or informal courses on critical thinking and complex problem solving. But right now, you can't find much of that. There is something out there, but not very much. And so as we think about our story and think about this scenario, we are now trying to figure out, first and foremost, how we should approach training these oil platform operators and managers, these people that are operating in a dangerous and complex environment. So how should we go about constructing our training programs to address ourselves to their needs, to support their training requirements, and to deliver meaningful and even enjoyable training so that these people can perform better in their hostile world? All right, so what we're talking about now, and let's assume that we are now in the conference room of our company, all right, and we are part of this Tiger team. And up on the board, the whiteboard, is this heading. It says, learning to think in complex environments. Okay, so that's the kind of the title of our initiative, right? So let me say that again. The title of our initiative is Learning to Think in Complex Environments. Now, as part of that, we're going to have, and somebody is up there talking, and we'll just assume that that's, it could be me or it could be anybody, but let's just assume that they've asked me to address the group in terms of how we should get started, how we should crank up this initiative, and do it in the right way. Let's not just jump off the cliff here. Let's figure out how we should go about thinking about this thing that we call a complex environment. How do we go about thinking about complex environments and complexity in general? All right, so I'm going to start my kickoff discussion here for the group. Now, we can say that in normal environments, normal or casual thinking will suffice, although mistakes will be made. But these mistakes and errors of judgment will be annoying, but not serious, because the environment is benign. So we could say that in normal and benign environments, mistakes are not going to be catastrophic. Now, Kahneman's book, Thinking Fast and Slow, does a pretty good job of examining this arena, the arena which we call normal, or these normal benign environments. Conversely, in a complex environment, our thinking needs to be adjusted for the conditions, especially because such conditions are at once challenging, confusing, and do not lend themselves to conventional methods of inquiry. All right, so continuing with this discussion, again in front of this group, this hypothetical group or Tiger team in this conference room. Conventional methods of inquiry all too often involve what has been traditionally known as analysis. This is where reductionism rules, and the point of focus is on the components or elements of a system or thing or a process. A great example of this is what goes on in the world that exists on an oil platform. Now, such component level methods of inquiry or thinking ignores the big picture, because big mechanisms, aka large scale systems, like exist on an oil platform or in a modern airplane or you name it, these things, if you will, these mechanisms, these systems are intrinsically complex. and thus exhibit properties and behaviors at the systems level that do not exist or appear at the component level. So just dealing with the components is not going to cut it. We have got to somehow, some way, figure out how we can address ourselves to the systems level aspects, the big picture, the total, or the wholeness of the whole operation. How do we do that? Now, we can do that, but it's not fairly common in this type of thinking. It is not fairly common. And so that's why we are involved in this, because it just to look ahead a little bit without being a spoiler, it will help us to consider key aspects of critical thinking. Now, the fact that the systems and their behaviors and the properties they exhibit at the system level does not appear or exist at the component level. This makes for a lively, challenging, and I think enormously interesting environment in which to engage our interest. But what about the act of cognition or thinking? Do we need to alter or change how we think before we consider what to think in complex environments? And the answer is yes. So the big picture question is, how should we think when we encounter a complex environment like the one on a deep water oil platform or a modern airliner or some kind of military operation? I like to use the term military expeditionary force, and on and on. It could be any big operation or big system. And the answer is that the how should allow us to consider in a meaningful way certain aspects of reality that are representative of complex environments. So it is very important here to ask ourselves, how should we think if we encounter complex environments, if we are in a complex environment, or we are investigating things that exist within a complex environment? How should we think? Now, the most important being that in complex environments, what appears plausible or what appears to be the case from the examination of a few components of the system or thing or environment is quite simply never true. Or another way of saying that is, it is never the actual. This is because, as J.W. Forrester asserts, complex systems behave counterintuitively. That is, the plausible tends to be wrong. So how should we think in environments that contain aspects of complexity and uncertainty? That is, complex environments. In the field of operational decision theory, the thinking goes something like this. An operational decision is a conceptual construct which resides in and is used in a complex environment and is only useful in such an environment. Conventional decision making, useful in normal environments, is not useful here and could be dangerously wrong. An operational decision, therefore, also known as complex problem solving, is problem solving in a complex environment. And this is singular among all other classes of decision making and contains three unique components. The first one is that decisions must often be made with incomplete information, that is, under conditions of uncertainty. The second one is that decisions must be made under increased time compression, given that complex environments are typically dynamic. And number three, the consequences of poor decisions could be catastrophic. And that's exactly what happened in the Deepwater Horizon catastrophe. It was the result of poor decision-making, and proper or effective decision-making clearly could have prevented such a tragedy. But even before we make any attempt at complex problem solving, we must, and I repeat, must clarify the actual state of affairs that we find ourselves in this particular reality we call complexity. The complex environment existing in the here and now. So, a formal process at clarification is necessary. And in other words, what we're doing here is we are clarifying the actual, and we do that by employing a formal process. So a formal process at clarification is, in fact, necessary. That's because, one, complex environments, complex systems, and big mechanisms are difficult to understand. Item two, our training and education to date has been inadequate with respect to complex environments and complex situations. Fortunately, critical thinking can help and is the bedrock skill from which everything else emerges. We should never learn anything, a skill, a discipline, or an orientation, without first learning how to think critically. So we must learn. In other words, if we are going to encounter or will possibly encounter a complex situation in our lives, in the course of our lives, course of our careers, course of our vocation, whatever it is, if we have a possibility of encountering complex situations, complex environments, then we should, as a requirement, we should insist that we learn and create this bedrock discipline. We must learn how to think critically. There is no option here. That is a hard and fast requirement, given that we will face a complex environment or a series of complex environments in the course of our lives, our careers. So the first thing we teach the oil platform workers is how to think critically in a complex environment. That's the first thing. All right, so we are going to be discussing that training program, how to think critically in complex environments. What does a training program or training module, what does it contain? What are the things that we need to get across to these oil platform workers? And we will be talking about that next week and perhaps in most likely the weeks to come. But I do think it's a rather interesting discussion that we're having, and I'm kind of excited about continuing this discussion for the next, at least for the next few weeks. All right, so that completes our discussion of critical thinking, part one. So let's go on to now part two. Okay, welcome back to part two. Part two is our radio, is our storyboard. And the storyboard for today is going to be in two segments. The first one is going to be a salute to our veterans. Veterans Day just occurred, but I wanted to mention that on this show, and partly because I'm a veteran, a retired veteran, and I wanted to acknowledge and honor all veterans who have served and those who have fallen in the service of this great country of ours. So there is a rather thoughtful and important piece in the Wall Street Journal written by General David Petraeus, and I will get into that in just a second. But General Petraeus is really talking about something that I have begun to address in my discussions about critical thinking. And I just want to remind you of what I just said in part one, which adds additional support for what General Petraeus will be asking America, all of us, in just a few minutes. Remember the report, the Future of Jobs report, published by the World Economic Forum. Now, they predicted that by 2020, critical thinking and complex problem solving will be the most in-demand set of skills in the global job market. Now, where do we find critical thinkers today? Now, obviously, we want to improve our training and education for everyone. But if we were to look at a group of Americans, where can we find those who have been trained to think critically in complex environments? And those would be our veterans, right? Why is that? Because they have had to learn and they have had to operate effectively in complex environments and high stress environments that were complex and often dangerous. Hostile, complex environments are the norm, if you will, in military operation and training. And so those amazing group of Americans are, in fact, our thought leaders in this arena that we call complexity. Now, they can be used not only to help organizations move into the fourth industrial revolution, which is primarily designed. The revolution is to provide us, or hopefully provide us as workers, with the tools necessary to compete in a complex global environment. And those tools would be how to manage complexity or how to think critically in complex environments. So the veteran is one of our national resources that can help us do this thing, help us get to place where we can become comfortable and proficient in dealing with complex environments and complex situations and complex problem solving. So David Petraeus, General David Petraeus, starts off by saying this. He says that every year as Veterans Day approaches, Americans ask themselves how they might best show their respect and appreciation for those who have served the nation in uniform. The question has taken on even greater importance as the wars of the post-9/11 period continue and as And as Afghanistan has become the longest war in U.S. history. Now, veterans deeply appreciate the near universal support they and their families receive, even from Americans who disagree with the policies that sent them to war. They are grateful for recognition at public events and for being told, "Thank you for your service." Veterans also appreciate tangible initiatives like the GI Bill, expanded Veterans Administration services, and the Yellow Ribbon Program at many colleges. Nothing, however, is more important to veterans who are making the transition from military service to civilian life than a job. Most employers recognize that hiring veterans is not just the right thing to do, it's good for business. Veterans bring to their firms extraordinary experiences in challenging endeavors. Those who have worn the uniform know what it's like to perform difficult missions, often literally under fire, against determined, frequently barbaric enemies in the most challenging terrain and weather conditions imaginable. Business leaders know that veterans have learned teamwork, discipline, initiative, and adaptability in the face of unexpected circumstances, in other words, in complex environments. Veterans can be counted on to lead, direct, inspire, and organize those for whom they are responsible. The attributes veterans bring to the workplace are now more highly prized than ever. That is reflected in the veterans' unemployment rate, which is now well below the national unemployment rate and the lowest it's been in 17 years. Now, that is really good news. All right, and I'm delighted with that news, and good for America for making that happen, and good for all of you who employ veterans. Yet, that only, and he continues, General Petraeus continues, he says that yet that only tells part of the story. Most veterans seek not just a job, but a fulfilling career that gives them a chance to apply the skills and expertise they gained during their military service. Such opportunities are not always offered. Indeed, at present, 43% of veterans leave their first civilian jobs during the first year, and 80% leave before the end of the second year. When asked why, they often cite limited opportunities for career advancement and personal development. So, what can employers do to provide careers, not just jobs? They can begin by investing in veterans by providing job skills training, education, mentoring, and support. Such investment can help veterans be all they can be in the civilian workforce. At KKR, this is the company that employs General Petraeus, our Vets at Work program encourages our portfolio companies to pursue initiatives going well beyond recruiting and job placement, striving instead to create career opportunities for veterans. The resources in our toolkit also helps civilian managers understand how to get the most out of a veteran's skills and experience. Since 2011, our portfolio companies have hired more than 50,000 veterans and military spouses for a variety of roles across numerous industries, a significant milestone for us as well as inspiration for continued growth. He goes on to say that merely hiring a veteran is not enough. America's employers can best serve our veterans and their own businesses by adopting proven practices that help former soldiers establish productive careers. Our veterans have given years of their lives to the defense of our country, We honor them by recognizing not just their past service, but their future potential by investing in them and striving to provide not just a job that pays the bills, but a fulfilling profession. That ends the article that General Petraeus has written. I would go on to say that in my work with the veterans groups that I work with, I often point out that veterans are a national resource. They're not a victims group. They are a national resource. And the resources that they have is first and foremost cognitive resources. So as we move into this new and intellectual frontier, some calling it the fourth industrial revolution, some calling it the cognitive era, if you will, the veteran then becomes a cognitive resource, a definable cognitive resource that will enable more and more organizations, more and more institutions, whether private or public, to perform better, because we are now needing those knowledge workers, as Peter Drucker would say. We now are needing these knowledge workers more and more, and the knowledge that we are needing, if you will, the knowledge that we have come to understand that we need is the higher order skills that come from being able to think critically. So that is what we need in the modern workforce of today and tomorrow. Particularly as I mentioned, if you remember, we mentioned the target date for that report was the year 2020. Well, that's only 3 years from now, all right? And so, in about 3 years, the world, as reported by the World Economic Forum, the world will need, to a greater extent than even today, the world will need these knowledge workers that possess these higher order skills that are representative of being able to think critically in complex environments. All right, so that completes my discussion of the salute to veterans that we do every year on Throttle Up. And so let us now move on to part three. Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up Part 3 for this week. And this is our radio essay. The radio essay is going to be about what's happening in American politics from the perspective of a couple of really interesting sources. So one of the sources is a really quite a remarkable book by Edward Klein. And Edward Klein has just written, well, it's just been released, a book entitled All Out War, The Plot to Destroy Trump. And he was also, I believe, if I remember right, he was also on the Sean Hannity show talking about his book. And I find it not only interesting, but really kind of consistent with what others are talking about and what I've observed and what I'm thinking about. What is really going on here? What's going on beneath the surface in our political system, or what we call politics, American politics? What's really going on? There's something it just doesn't feel right. It doesn't look right. There's something rather sinister going on beneath the surface. And I think there's two sources here that I would refer my listeners to that could help. Of course, we're going to continue to follow this on this show. Of course, this would be one source. And the other one is Edward Klein's book, The All-Out War, The Plot to Destroy Trump. And the third one is Rush Limbaugh's My Winning Formula. And he has a rather interesting discussion in his newsletter, and also he talks about this on his radio show. And so I would say the third source would be Rush Limbaugh. And I think what I'm beginning to see here is the uncovering of what the establishment wants you to believe versus what is actually going on, and things that they don't want you to know. Now, in setting this up, remember that the Democratic National Committee during the last presidential election was engaged in activities that they did not want you to know about. Okay, they were hidden. They were undercover. They were under the surface. They simply did not want you to know about it. And I think the same is true of what's going on today as part of the efforts to undermine Donald Trump and the Trump administration. So listen to this quote that was attributed to a gentleman by the name of Thomas Friedman in the New York Times on the 17th of October. I'm quoting here, "The most frightening thing about the Trump presidency." Now, remember, Thomas Friedman is a liberal. Okay, he writes for the New York Times. He's a columnist for the New York Times. He's also an author. One of his books is "The World Is Flat," I believe is the title of it. He says, and you would expect him to be frightened, and he is. He says that the most frightening thing about the Trump presidency is Trump's willingness to unravel so many longstanding policies and institutions at once, from NAFTA to Obamacare to Global Climate Accord to the Domestic Clean Power Initiative to the Pacific Trade Deal to the Iran nuclear deal, etc. Now, Rush Limbaugh takes a look at that quote, and he goes on to say the following. He says that the left is in an absolute panic. He says that the edifice of Obamaism, carefully constructed over the last 8 years, is crashing. President Trump is wielding his executive pen and his phone to bring down the entire Obama legacy, week by week, day by day, hour by hour. Trump nixes the Paris Accord, decertifies the Iran deal, kicked DACA to the curb, kneecapped Obamacare, pulled the plug on UNESCO, launched yet another major pipeline, and in a revolutionary act, had his HHS declare that life begins at conception. Vile sex trafficking rings are being smashed all across the country, jailing hundreds of perps and rescuing scores of children. The president repealed Clean Power Plan, Obama's regulatory nightmare, bringing the coal industry back from the dead. He reduced illegal immigration by 70%. He's ending the era of the giant sucking sound by renegotiating NAFTA. He's enforcing our borders and restoring the rule of law. Okay, so now that's the backdrop of this rather remarkable book that is, again, entitled The All-Out War by Edward Klein. Now, he starts off by saying the following, and this is really rather chilling, and this is not particularly good news, but I think we have to understand what is really going on beneath the surface. So let me start off. I have just a few minutes left, but let me start off in discussing this, and then I will discuss it further in the weeks ahead Also recognizing that I have promised you that I would finish my discussion of The Art of War by Sun Tzu, and I intend to do that, but we somehow just run out of time. We've got so much to cover each and every week. I'm delighted that we have so much to cover, but we get a little bit, I mean, the current events have certainly something to do with what we stress. So Edward Klein points out, let me start off his book. He says that America, you are entitled to your own opinion, but you are not entitled to overthrow the democratically elected president of the United States and inflict irreparable damage on our country. That, however, is what Donald Trump's enemies on the left and right are doing through a variety of underhanded tactics, lies, leaks, obstruction, and violence. They are all waging an all-out war to delegitimize President Trump and drive him from office before he can drain the swamp and take away their power. Who are these ruthless villains? Well, you've heard many of them. They are Elizabeth Warren, Al Franken, George Soros. You've seen their names in the media and heard them on TV. Jake Tapper, Don Lemon, Rachel Maddow, others may be unfamiliar to you. Neera Tandem, Tom Steyer, Anna Gallant, still others are nameless members of the permanent government, the so-called deep state. What all these villains have in common is their refusal to accept Trump as their president. They live in an alternate universe. And so I will stop there and promise to continue my discussions and interpretations of what I believe and many of us believe is really going on in this country, which is unfortunate, but we need to understand it. We need to be able to be prepared to confront it in our lives. We need to be able to vote for those people who will, in fact, confront this rather depressing and despicable activities by these people that we can collectively call the anti-Trump movement. All right, so I can see by the clock on the wall, we have now come to the end of another Throttle Up radio show. And I am delighted to be here and to be able to talk with you, my Throttle Up audience, each and every weekend. And of course, we are on every weekend on Red State Talk Radio. We are on three times every weekend on the Red State Talk Radio Network. And my appreciation goes out to the folks at Red State Talk Radio for their continued and amazing support for Throttle Up Radio. Thank you so much. Again, and once again, thank you for all you veterans. Thank you for your service. And I hope you all had a happy Veterans Day as I have had. And thank you for all that you have done for this great country. Thank you, all of you on active duty in the Guard, in the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country and for the families of the veterans and the military members. Thank you. Thank you for being there. And I know that is important. I believe it's one of the most important things that anyone can do. All right, we are at the end of another show, Throttle Up, and so we will be back and be discussing more of the same stuff with you next week. Good day.